Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Judith Kampfner, standing in for Lisa Simeoni. A comedian friend of mine recently found to his horror that he'd been double booked. He was to read his new novel at a London bookstore and appear at a sold-out concert in the Midlands. The same night, the same time, what to do? He got the concert promoters to start the show an hour later, and he booked a BMW chauffeur service. He succeeded in walking on stage calm and relaxed. He'd had the ultimate hassle-free luxury taxi experience. It had achieved the near impossible, a 3-hour drive in under half that time, and he'd even had a nap. Most of us only get to ride in regular taxi cabs, but even so, taxis are invaluable. I think so anyway. Here's my homage to the taxi drivers in the two cities where I live. I've called it the yellow and the black. Oh, la, 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 taxi men. Yeah. Oh, la, 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 la. Talk about taxis as a guilty pleasure. It is expensive riding in a taxi cab, more so in London than New York, but well worth it, especially in London if you're in a hurry and don't know where you're going. The black and the yellow, two distinctive hues for instantly recognisable vehicles. Imagine a New York street and you'll picture a sea of yellow cabs. Here's Alan Fromberg, Deputy Commissioner of the New York Taxi and Limousine Commission.
The colour yellow with a little bit of red mixed in is most able to be seen from long distances. And so that became very, very widely used adopted in New York City. Whereas in the past, even as recently as the early 70s, they were beige and green and checkered. But since the late 70s, they were all yellow. And that's not going to change anytime soon.
While New York has gone for uniformity, London cabs are becoming less standardized. They've always been black. But recently they come in shocking pinks, golds and whites, with advertisements wrapped all over the bodywork. But the shape remains essentially unchanged. The life of the cab driver is the same in both cities. But recently there are new demands and more regulations, says Commissioner Fromberg, who oversees the industry.
I suppose it is potentially as highly regulated as air travel, in the manner that that we're very, very closely involved with the safety of the vehicle itself, the training of the drivers. You know, we standardize every manner in which the service is provided.
A few years ago, Alan Fromberg decided to cajole a few New York personalities to record a message reminding passengers to take their belongings and buckle up.
Hello, this is Jackie Mason. Who else would talk like this? You'd probably say I never did anything for you. I'm going to do something for you now. Buckle up. It's a lot safer that way.
The authorities in London and New York constantly update their safety standards for drivers and passengers. Traffic congestion and exhaustingly long hours are inescapable in both metropolises.
This is not something you do for fun. You sit for 10 hours...
Gary Dorius is a Manhattan taxi driver.
It is hard. It is stressy. It is humiliating. But you do what you have to do. You have to leave. You have to pay your bills. People look at cab drivers like uneducated people.
Despite the lack of status, Gary Dorius says he likes the job and has stuck at it for 7 years. And will keep going until he has enough money to retire to his homeland in Haiti.
We're seeing drivers staying in the industry a lot longer. It's a stable industry. It's done well for people. People are staying in the industry an average of 9 years, whereas it used to be 1, 2, maybe 3 years. It used to be much more transient than it is today.
I got out of the Army in 75. I just got my hack license, and I've been driving off and on since then.
The film noirish music with its moody solo saxophone is from the 1976 film Taxi Driver, the film which many people think of when imagining driving a cab through the hallucinatory world of early morning New York. That is not to say that the life of the New York cabbie is in any way the world of the tormented, psychopathic anti-hero in Scorsese's film. New York is so different now, says cab driver John McDonough.
It's not as dangerous as before, but you still have to watch what you're doing. You still want to keep your doors locked. When you're rolling down streets, you want to make sure people are just not too messed up, drunk, or on drugs, because you don't need the drama that they're going to bring into the cab. And you get that with experience driving.
Every week, John works 3 12-hour shifts, because he says you can't do any more. You need to pace yourself, or you'd go berserk.
Listen, I'll just try and get the car and just bring it over here.
It's pouring outside the garage in Long Island City, Queens. John, who's not on the best of terms with his dispatcher, tells me to keep out of the way while he picks up the car he's been assigned in the lot.
Let me see your weight.
So you're just really making yourself comfortable,
aren't you? Yeah, I get set up. And what I would normally do if you weren't there in front, I would make sure that door was locked. Because I don't like people sitting in the front. It's just...
So I'm here with John McDonough, and he's just getting ready for the night shift.
Well, actually, this is the day shift.
Oh, this is called the day shift.
Yeah, yeah. This 12-hour shift is about $10 cheaper than the night shift.
Okay.
So there is a difference between the two.
So it's just past 2 a.m. It's 2:04 on your clock.
See, I was hoping to get a new car today. Because this car has, let me just see. You know, 138,000 miles. This is going to be put out to pasture very shortly. So he gave me the privilege of driving it into the taxi graveyard.
So because it's a rainy night, is it?
Yeah, rainy night is good. People, if it was a nice, warm night, you know, people would naturally walk and take in the night. But when it's raining, they'll even take it for short rides. They could be at a bus stop. They don't see the bus. They'll flag you down to do that. So rain is good, but although you got to watch for... all the cars skidding on the road.
Why don't you own your own car?
Well, I probably should have done it many years ago when the medallion or the cab cost, say, $30,000 or $40,000. At the moment, the medallion or the yellow cab is going for near $600,000. So it would have been a good investment.
There are advantages to not owning a medallion. You don't have to run the business. You can choose to work when you want to and as often as you want to. But what you do have to do is pay off the cost of leasing the car for each shift.
$40 in gas and $108 for the lease, so that'd be almost $150. I would have to make right away in the first couple of hours. That's what you're basically working for. And then after that, the money coming in would be yours, which gives you the benefit that the more tired you're getting, that's essentially when you're making your money. Because now you have the lease covered, you got the gas covered, and... you know, if you stay out longer, every penny you take in is yours. So then, but you're getting more tired. You're more susceptible to accidents.
The Taxi and Limousine Commission of New York may be proud of its rules, but John feels as if he's on the front line of a struggle between those who dictate the rules of the city and those who work within them.
If you park near a hydrant, if you double park, you could run in to get a cup of coffee or tea. You could come out and there's a $115 ticket in your cab. And then your day is shot. You're literally driving and working to pay off that ticket. You know, gone are the days of just blowing light after light and dealing with the cops who, you know, they're not around. They can't see you running red lights. I mean, I had a thing the other night. I had a guy flag me down. His wife is pregnant and she's in labor. He goes, listen, you got to get me to the hospital. You know, this is it. I said, all right, get in. And I hear her... they're 2 minutes apart. I'm there, oh, Jesus, don't have the baby here. I don't want to be in the New York Post. This is the start of my shift. Now, the guy wanted me to run the light, and she kept going, they're down to 1 minute, dear. So I literally did not run the lights. We pull up in front of the hospital. They had emergency people there. She was laying in the back, and the contractions were going, and they finally stopped, and they got her out into a thing and got her into the hospital. I said, thank God.
It doesn't even pay to go and file a report if someone threatens you with a knife. Because time at the precinct is time without a fare. But violence doesn't happen very often. The city's less dangerous now, but on the downside, there's less nightlife than there was 10 years ago.
we try to head for some action.
I'm going to be heading over now to Times Square, where you'll have more of the clubs, the topless joints.
In his novel Brooklyn Follies, writer Paul Auster gets under the skin of the New York taxi driver.
Gliding through Times Square at 3:30 in the morning, all the traffic's gone. And suddenly you're alone in the center of the world, with neon raining down on you from every corner of the sky. Or pushing the speedometer up past 70 on the Belt Parkway just before dawn, smelling the ocean as it pours in on you through the open window. Or traveling across the Brooklyn Bridge at the very moment a full moon rises into the arch. And that's all you can see. The bright yellow roundness of the moon, so big that it frightens you. And you forget that you live down here on Earth. And imagine you're flying. That the cab has wings, and you're actually flying through space.
See, between 12 to almost 4, it's quiet. Because anybody's at a bar drinking, they tend to stay there till they close at 4 o'clock. Then it starts looking like Night of the Living Dead, where everybody's thrown out of the bar. Now, you can see this is Times Square, and this is another thing I hate. You get a lot of the tourists, and this pertains mainly to guys. Now at 4 o'clock, they're drunk, they're high. So when they get out, they'll ask me, listen, where are the women at? So right away, I know they're looking for hookers. I said, listen, guys, it's late. When do you go back that? They said, well, where can we cop some coke? I said, now you want me to be your pimp, your driver, and now your drug dealer.
Is that a hooker?
No, not in this area. And generally, hookers would take cabs. They wouldn't be walking because they would have made money for the night, and they would take a taxi home. And then I would ask them, how was your night? And they would say, yeah, it was all right. And they would ask me, how's your night? Yellow cabs are used a lot to buy drugs. People would get in, and they'll take you up to a certain neighborhood, and they'll say, listen, can you just wait here for a second? I'm going back downtown. So they'll run into the building, and then they'll run out. Like, the other night, I had three transvestites get in, and they were going all the way up to Washington Heights. And, of course, when they get in, they want to hear rap music. So they go, man, put on the station to this. Could you turn it up? And I got rap music coming out of my head. So we get up there, and they said, listen, just wait here. So now they're not going to pay me because they want to hold me because there's no yellow cabs up to Washington Heights. Like, yellow cabs just don't work these neighborhoods. So I'm waiting there, and, like, you know, I'm starting to sweat a bit. They left one person there. Next thing, these two guys, they come flying back in the cab. Go, go, go. So right away, I think they probably ripped off the drug dealers. So I'm not asking any questions. I just put my head down, boom. So now the fare was good. I went uptown, I got all the way back downtown. But, you know, it's just stuff like that. You get jammed up in these situations that could get very ugly and very dangerous.
Well, there's no drama tonight. It's just miserable and hard to stay awake. And where to go to get the fares?
You drive around the city all night, and you never know where you're going next.
Writer Paul Auster.
Customer climbs into the back seat of your cab, tells you to take him to such and such a place, and that's where you go. Riverdale, Fort Greene, Murray Hill, Far Rockaway, the dark side of the moon. Every destination's arbitrary, every decision governed by chance. You float, you weave. You get there as fast as you can, but you don't really have a say in the matter. You're a plaything of the gods. You have no will of your own. The only reason you're there is to serve the whims of other people.
Our 90-minute search for the elusive passenger is over. Not a drug dealer or a hooker. No, he's going to a seminary. He's cold sober, and he even wants to chat.
Say?
You're a minister?
Yeah, and I teach philosophy. Did you get a lot of ministers riding around at 2 in the morning? Or?
Well, you know what? They wouldn't mention it. You know, most people, what goes on now, there's hardly any conversation between passengers and drivers because everybody's on their cell phone. Oh, everybody's right. Got their iPod. We now have the new system in the back where there's 12-minute commercials running. So the interaction between cab drivers and passengers is almost becoming a thing of the past.
Do you miss that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, I'm born and raised here in the city, so, you know, I like talking, and it does help with the tips, particularly with tourists. You tell them what's going on in the city and stuff like that.
Did he give you a good tip?
A couple of dollars. He gave average. And you would think a minister on the Upper East Side could have been a little bit better, because this is probably one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the world. Now, I'm not even saying the city, the world.
The meanest tippers are the women who live in this area, says John.
Oh, driver, could you turn the radio down, please? It's annoying. God forbid if you're on the cell phone. Driver, please turn off that. And it's always driver, you know, because they treat you like a chauffeur. And you are their little chauffeur for whatever, 5 or 10 minutes.
Later, because it's raining, John breaks one of his own rules.
Normally, I don't like guys with hoods on, but... Yeah, where to, Matt?
We're in Brooklyn, take the Williamsburg Bridge.
Yeah, where to in Brooklyn?
Bush Street Corner, 267 Colton.
Huh?
I'm drunk.
Yeah, all right. As long as you stay awake, man. That's my main thing.
John kept talking to him so he would stay awake. Passengers are sometimes too drunk to tell you where they live.
I've had times where I've opened up the door and I pulled the guy out and just left him on the corner. I said, I'm not going to drive around. I'm not a social worker, you know.
Last night, John took home $100 from his 12-hour shift. He'll keep going till 11 a.m. when he has breakfast. London cab driver Jamie Owens, like John McDonough, drives nights. He says that now the pubs no longer have to close at 11 p.m., drinking habits are changing.
He said years ago, you used to see women go into a pub and drag their husband out when he was drunk and sort of march him home. And nowadays, all you seem to see is men carrying pissed women about all over the place. And I think you tend to get more trouble out of women nowadays than you do out of the men, because the men are staying sober to make sure their wives get home properly.
Is it true that London now is more alive in the early hours of the morning than it ever was? So presumably there's more business.
It is, yeah. I mean, I think London's becoming a 24-hour-a-day city. The roads in London are in no set order whatsoever. They just sort of crisscross each other at random, and it can be quite a daunting place to someone who doesn't know their way around.
The grid system in New York means, of course, that it's easier to navigate. Whilst London's maze of tiny, winding one-way streets, often with names which are not pronounced as they're spelt, means it takes some expertise to get around. London black cab drivers have to pass a rigorous series of tests before they get their license. Nearly 500 routes have to be learnt by heart, and much other information besides, and this data is called the knowledge, with a capital K. John McDonough is full of admiration.
So I've been to London quite a few times. I actually worked there for a little while one summer. So I know all about the knowledge and things like that. I don't know how London cabbies do it. It's the London cabbie. My son was a cabbie. My father was a cabbie. It's a very proud tradition. You don't have that here.
The knowledge sounds almost biblical, doesn't it? It's a feat of memory and endurance, which effectively means that you know all the streets of London within a 12-mile radius of the centre. You will have to drive in the quickest possible way using all the back streets and shortcuts. Passing takes anything from 18 months to 4 years full time, depending on how fast you get through the levels of tests. You have to learn the streets on a motorbike with a clipboard marking off the routes. When you're in training like this, you're not allowed to ask directions, says veteran driver Steve McNamara.
I went around on a moped, yeah, and in the cold and the wet. All the stories, wearing women's tights, 4 pairs of gloves, long johns, wellies, hats.
No, I don't believe the women's tights.
Yeah, no, I did. I've still got them. They're great. All of that sort of stuff.
You're a tall man. It must have been a tall woman's tights.
Yeah, I preferred the 5 denier, but they were very difficult to get at the time. No, I did all of that.
Steve McNamara is a graduate of one of the oldest knowledge schools, and I go to visit his alma mater. Inside, along the tops of the shelves, are rows of bike helmets. Everyone in this classroom is busy, except for one guy taking time out. Danny is changing career in late middle age and finding it hard going. I asked him if the training was like a vocation.
You end up like a priest because you don't end up having no sex with your wife, because that all goes out the window. So you end up like a priest. You don't. All you think about is roads, not your wife.
Do you dream roads?
Dream them all night long, truthfully. And then you start worrying about, can you do right turns in the middle of the night? This is 3 o'clock in the morning. And then you wake up, you pick your book up and check. That's how hard it is.
The main classroom is packed because Derek, who runs the school, is having one of his fiercely competitive and hugely popular quizzes.
For 3 points. Quiet! For 3 points, Captain Bligh's tomb. Captain Bligh of Mutiny on the Bounty, where is his tomb?
His tomb is on Lambeth Circus, Lambeth Palace Road.
I can't take it. It's not Lambeth Road, then. It is actually Lambeth Road for Captain Bligh's tomb, not Lambeth Palace Road. Sorry. Rules is rules. Rules is rules. Quiet!
Derek won't budge, and they adore him for it. He's the kind of cool teacher who plays it tough.
For 1 point, the Cats Protection League.
Wakeley Street.
Wrong answer. That's dogs.
I'm more than impressed. I mean, the Cats Protection League, well, there's a place you visit every day.
Take me from Manor House to Gibson Square.
Oh, Manor House to Gibson Square, sir. Manor House is Green Lanes. Gibson Square is on Matilda Street.
In the next door room, two Caribbean students sit at either end of a map of London on a table. Colin calls out a route, and Daniel looks straight ahead of him and attempts to deliver from memory the most direct way to do this journey. Street,
right into Matilda Street, 42 Matilda Square, sit down on the left.
I think we should do that. Let's do that again. Let's do that one more time.
Was you right? Are you sure?
No.
He's one street out. He would have failed.
It really is such an impressive group of people, these licensed London taxi drivers. I mean, it's absolutely staggering the amount of knowledge they have to acquire in order to get an operating licence. They have to learn 25,000 streets in London, how they relate to each other. They have to learn thousands of places of interest. The examinations are really stringent by the Public Carriage Office.
Dr. Eleanor Maguire, a neuroscientist at University College London, has studied the cabbie's brain.
Well, they're certainly cramming a lot of spatial information in there. And what we found when we looked at their brain scans was, in fact, that their hippocampus, this brain structure that's very important for memory, had changed shape compared to people who aren't taxi drivers. So the back part or the posterior part of this brain structure was bigger in taxi drivers.
Yeah, I think London's the best city in the world. It's the third oldest city in the world.
For many drivers, the lust to keep absorbing information doesn't stop with the knowledge. Jamie Owens, for one, has gone on to earn a prized London tour guide badge.
I'm not too sure. Don't forget, the history of London goes back 880 BC.
Does it?
The thing about London is it was built originally from the Roman city. So a lot of the roads around the city of London are very small. And the Romans had no sort of plan when they was building the roads. They just sort of spiralled out from the centre.
In an old city, there are many traditions. Most drivers have a nickname. I was introduced to the Face and the Somali. There's lots of banter and almost a private code. And though many words are old Cockney, immigrant cultures have had an impact.
There's all sorts of things. A musher is somebody who runs his own cab. I think it's Yiddish. A droshky is a cab, which I think is Russian Yiddish, I think. The London cab trade had a big Jewish influence, probably between about 1920 and the late 70s, early 80s, and there's a lot of Yiddish words.
And is that still used?
You don't hear it as much, but you still hear that one. You certainly hear...
Might you say sort of like, your droshky needs a wash?
That would be incorrect. That would be a sherbet. Your sherbet would need a wash. That's Cockney rhyming slang.
Sherbet is a candy powder with a dab of licorice. So a sherbet dab equals cab. Rhyming slang is a game of word substitutions where a rhyme is used in place of the word itself. A cabbie once gave me change for a 10 with a Godiva, meaning a fiver, a £5 note. The metre is called a hickory, as in the children's rhyme Hickory Dickory Dock for clock. These drivers love the romance of London town.
You do still get a buzz. I always find Waterloo Bridge at night. I always tend to drive a little bit slower and look around. You see St Paul's and the old city to the east. You've got Westminster and now, obviously, the London Eye, the Ferris wheel to the west. And then as you disappear into the Strand underpass, it always reminds me of one of those sort of 60s gangster films, Get Carter or something, where you've got all the fluorescent tubes flashing overhead.
When it comes to taxi drivers in film and literature, I asked Alan Fromberg, Deputy Commissioner of the New York Taxi and Limousine Commission, for his favourite moment.
You know, I can't really point to a scene in a movie, and I can't really point to a particular piece of literature. I think of the people themselves. I think of drivers. I think of the driver who returned the video camera to a family who had used that camera to track the progress of their little girl who was going through chemotherapy for cancer. Some of the things that I've seen and some of the people I've met over the years are just so extraordinary. I think of the work ethic that they bring to it, and there are thousands and thousands of cab drivers who belong to Cab Watch whose eyes and ears supplement the police department and have saved a lot of lives by getting ambulances faster to the scene. To me, that's the taxi industry. These drivers who are just such extraordinary people. Who really, really care and really, really love the city.
Well, perhaps cab drivers in New York aren't all heroes. And cab drivers in London don't all have superior brains. But they work exhausting, numbing hours, and it's lonely and unpredictable, especially in the early hours of the morning when the world of the city is at its most irrational. Suddenly your space is invaded by a difficult drunk stranger who vomits on your back seat, but you take him home.
This is Jackie Mason reminding you to take your belongings. You don't have to take them, but if you want to, it's up to you. By the way, ask for a receipt. Take it, ask him, don't be ashamed.
Take me home, taxi man. It is my time to go. Take me home, taxi man. It is my time to go.
I'd like to thank my new taxi driver friends, John McDonough in New York, and Jamie Owens and Steve McNamara in London. The reader was Gerald Seligman. Yellow and Black was mixed by Jared Weisbrot. I'm Judith Kampfner. You can visit Soundprint anytime online at soundprint.org. You'll find all of our shows there and links to useful information. That address again is soundprint.org. Next week, don't miss the first documentary in our special international collaboration, Global Perspectives. This year's theme is Escape. That all starts next week on Soundprint. You can own your favourite Soundprint episodes on CD for a small fee by calling 1-888-38-TAPES. That's 1-888-38-TAPES. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Centre in association with WAMU and American University. If you have any questions or comments about today's show, get in touch with us by emailing talkback@soundprint.org. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Morgiku and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. The executive producer is Moira Rankin. For Lisa Simeone, I'm Judith Kampfner.